And now, the Last Word on Habs podcast, brought to you by the Last Word on Sports Network. Let's start the show.
Welcome back to the Last Word on Habs podcast. I'm Connor LaPomme, and as always, I'm joined by Johannes Wilden. Johannes, you have any breath left?
just a little bit, enough for one more game tonight in this series. Connor, is this what Mark Bergevin means when he says in the playoffs anything can happen?
I guess so. I mean, I think it's come to quite a shock to most, even the most diehard believers, that the Canadians have forced a game seven Monday night. We've been critics of the team and the management for, I mean, most of the year, no more than just this year. But I mean, I think you can agree, like, when the playoffs start, I mean, we all just want to see the team do well. So it's been an exciting last couple of games with the way they've played. And game sevens are fun. And obviously all the pressure now is on the Leafs, who have their spotty history with game sevens in the past, especially this current group. So it's going to be fun to watch hopefully the pressure mount and the Maple Leafs fan base and the Maple Leafs cheerleading Sportsnet cheerleaders kind of wilt under the pressure of game seven. That's how I hope, you know.
So Connor, give me a sense of your media diet, because you know that I listen to a lot of TSN 690, and then on Twitter I follow a variety of folks who have a variety of opinions on the Habs. But I tend to avoid the Toronto media world just in general. Tell me about how much attention are you paying to, obviously Toronto is the media center of Canada, and therefore everything gets filtered through whatever the Toronto folks want to say about stuff. But how much Toronto media are you personally consuming?
Not much. I mean, apart from what I'll see on Twitter, some stuff is kind of unavoidable. excuse me. But not much. I mean, the only reason I'm saying that is, for game six, I was watching the game with some friends in the backyard. So we kind of just left the game on, so we're kind of forced to watch the intermission. Because normally I don't, because I can't take it. Like, I find they do a really bad job at Sportsnet with the intermission. I mean, we've talked about it before, how they operate as a regional they're a regional broadcaster, but they're a national broadcaster. So it's frustrating to watch if you're not a Leafs fan, I guess. Where everything is filtered through that lens. And I mean, I just find it kind of funny, like, even after Kotkaniemi won scored the overtime goal, they kept going back to, like, Jack Campbell made a save on Nick Suzuki, like, if the Leafs, you know, he made the save, like, they were talking about this save, and it was a pretty good save, but, you know, it was like, this could have been the moment. It's like, well, it wasn't, so, like, what are we doing here? You know, like, they spent, you know, 9 out of 10 minutes talking about whatever's going on with Toronto, and then, you know, 30 seconds for the out-of-town scoreboard and 30 seconds for the opponent. So it's just frustrating. But I try – actually, media in general, I'm kind of not too much of it. I mean, I used to listen to TSN 690 a lot when I'd be going to work in the car. But since I'm – you know, since the pandemic, I'm not really in the car a whole lot. My media diet's gone a little bit down, which I think has actually been kind of good because I don't know. I just I tried listening to the post-game show after the game on Saturday, just coming home from my friend's house, and I couldn't do it. I don't know why. I'd say it had been so long, and I was just like, I can't do it. I can't listen to I guess it's the people sometimes that can call in, and the fans can be a little crazy. I don't know. But I'm happy with sort of just being on my own at the moment without too much media from either side.
Well, you're a content creator now, so
that's true.
You don't need any extra media. You're creating your own media, brother.
That's right.
So there's lots of things to talk about. I mean, whether we want to talk about player usage or just bask in the glow of two overtime winners, but I thought maybe we'd start to the beginning of the week. When we recorded last week, we weren't feeling particularly good. Hopeful, but still, you know, slightly concerned. This week obviously unfolded in a surprising way. Take me back to Monday and the 2-1 loss. What did you make of that game?
it was a bit troubling, just because while the score was close, I mean, if you watch the game, Montreal was generating nothing offensively. You know, it would kind of be the problem they've had all year, where they work really hard to have to get it out of their zone, or they'd be hemmed in a bit, and by the time it was, you know, they were trying to start a forecheck, they're like, well, we got to change. So they dump it in and it would start all over again. So they could get no consistent sustained pressure. I think there might have been one or two shifts where they spent, you know, they actually generated something that wasn't off the rush. So it was a bit frustrating. You know, it was a 2-1 game that felt more like a 5-1 game. Because you could just see that the Canadians were not going to score. There was nothing going on. and it was kind of a bit of well, we kind of said, you know, game two, we thought they played okay and the score was a bit flattering to Toronto. I think the Canadians play kind of carried over to that into game three, and then I definitely carried into game four as well, where it was a lot of the same from game three, where couldn't generate much, you know. Obviously, the power play was invisible for the first six games of the series. So, you know, anytime they get a sniff of a chance, the power play would actually work against them. And it just seemed like Toronto kind of was in play. People were sort of saying they kind of were following the Calgary or Ottawa script on how to play Montreal. It certainly felt that way just because Montreal was, like, considering it was a playoff game, you know, they seemed disengaged, disinterested, you know, uninvolved. It was really kind of frustrating to see. And, of course, you know, scoring in those, you know, games two, three, and four, they scored two goals. So, you know, a lot of the problems that everyone were worried about with the Canadians were definitely on full display. And I think people were getting real concerned that it was going to be a very short, you know, it ended up being a short series despite the Canadians winning the first game. And I think I felt the same way. I think most Canadians fan were kind of assuming it was over, you know, despite hoping for the best, you know, in your heart, you kind of see what's the writing on the wall. Thankfully they surprised us, but yeah, it was a lot of doom and gloom before game six, I think, amongst most Habs fans, just based on, I mean, what you saw on the ice, you couldn't really defend and you couldn't find a spark, I think, in other than Carey Price in how the Canadians were playing up until game six.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me on Monday, it was all the worst tendencies of Montreal, sort of not being able to beat the neutral zone trap, not being able to generate any offense, not showing any energy. And I think the big thing was just a lack of urgency. And I thought on both nights, on Monday and Tuesday, that's sort of like, what game are you playing? Like, this is not a preseason game. And it just felt like people were going through the motions a little bit. And so, as you say, going into game five and game six, I think there was some legitimate concern among the fan base, but that concern was justified, I think. It didn't seem like the players had showed up on time to play. I just think the lack of urgency, it didn't look like a playoff game. And obviously your best friend Tony Marinaro made this point, just lacked any sense of the moment they were in. And so the 2-1 loss on Monday sort of followed up by the 4-0 loss on Tuesday. And again, it looked like the worst that we've seen of the team magnified. Because of the time of the season, it was all the worst things that we'd come to see, and they couldn't put anything together.
Yeah, and I mean, as a fan, if like we've been watching this team all year, it kind of definitely felt like what they look like coming down the stretch. So I mean, maybe you were also, I don't know, I can't speak for everyone, but I was thinking maybe they are like completely out of gas now, and they had, you know, that one decent effort in game one, and that's sort of all they had. And I mean, we can touch on a bit the questionable lineup decisions that were being made. I mean, I think Cole Caulfield only drew in game three, or was it game four? Do you remember which game he got in?
Well, they didn't play him until, I thought they played him on Thursday. Caulfield came in. No, he played on Tuesday.
He played in game five, right? Game four. Excuse me. And, you know, and it was supposed to be Tatar coming out, but then apparently Stahl got hurt. You know, and Caulfield didn't look too bad. He had actually a pretty good chance. He rang it off the crossbar. But that was also like the only chance they generated, it seemed like, in that game. So, but no, they finally got a bit of the youth in. It seems like once the kids started getting more of the game, which is what we saw last year in the bubble, you know, the game started, the whole series kind of started to turn. And we see that in game six where the Canadians win the game 4-3 in overtime. You know, they jumped out to a 3-0 lead, so you're not really happy about them blowing a 3-0 lead to the Leafs to force overtime on. But, you know, they got the win. It doesn't matter. You know, Nick Suzuki and Caulfield on that 2-0 on a brutal, brutal, brutal giveaway from Alex Galchenyuk. I think he should get a secondary assist on that. But still, you know, it was good to see the Canadians battle back. And, you know, they actually looked good. You know, they looked like they had energy. Looked like they were realizing what, you know, the moment, I guess, as you were saying. It's like they're in the playoffs. You can't just sort of go through the motions. You know, this is do or die. And they played that way, and I think they were, despite the fact they went to overtime, I think the Canadians were on balance the better team, and they probably deserved a bit of a better fate. I mean, the Leafs got a couple of weird goals, you know, like not weird, but like deflected goals, screen. Like they got a couple, look, they scored, they tied it, they did what they had to do, but I wouldn't say it was because they were like forcing the play or generating crazy amounts of pressure, and the Canadians were on their heels a bit. It was just, you know, Jake Muzzin with a seeing eye shot from the point, and then another one with a weird deflection. I mean, we could break down defensively how they could have done it better, but I just think, you know, I don't think it's sort of worth it to break it down because I don't think they played too badly in Game 6. And actually, you know, I think in Game 5 and Game 6, they were the better team on balance. But I don't know. What did you think about Game 5? I thought, I mean, the Canadians deserve better than an overtime win, I think. I don't think a game should have been that close, but obviously we'll take the excitement of an overtime winner.
Well, especially that one. I mean, that will make every, you know, pre-game package that the Canadians put together for the next few years. The big difference in games 5 and 6 was the urgency. And I thought in both games, the first period were among the best first periods the Canadians have played all season. And I thought the second period, which was crucial because that's where the Leafs have really beaten up on Montreal. Earlier in the season, I thought the Habs played incredibly well. In Game 5, they matched them one goal for one goal. In Game 6, they held them to no score in the second period. Of course, the problem is, and this is the point that Sergio Momesso has been making on the broadcast, just if you're a Habs fan and you are watching the dolts that they have on television calling the game, let me just say, and I don't get paid for saying this, I don't get a free hat or, you know, a t-shirt or anything like that, but sync up Dan Robertson calling the game. It is so much better to listen to someone that knows the team call the game. And yeah, it's a little bit of a pain in the ass because the commercial breaks, you know, throw things off just a little bit and you got to get fancy with your pause button. But like, it's honestly so much better. And the point that they were sort of making is that the Canadians have struggled to put together a solid 60-minute game. I think arguably the only good 60-minute game they played all this series was the first game. And, of course, they just eked out the small victory to take the early surprising lead. But where we saw things fall apart, both on Thursday and Saturday, games 5 and 6 were the third period. And this gets in for me to some questions around player usage, and I don't want to go too far down that road because they are where they are, and second guessing, you know, although Montreal fans have a long history of second guessing every decision the team makes, I think there are some legitimate questions to ask about going to 4D in Game 6 and also keeping Caulfield and Kokkonen out of the series until finally when, you know, we can say if there's one line around this series, I think it's that the kids are all right and we should be playing the kids with a defined role for veterans, to be sure. But like, that's the future of your team. And it still shocks me that it took so long for Caulfield to get in. I think the thing that, you know, I don't want to get too far ahead of us because we can leave our discussions about what's going to happen tonight in Game 7 to a little bit later in the pod. But I will say the thing that I want to be looking for is whether they can put together a solid 60-minute effort. Because both on Thursday and Saturday, things fell apart in the third period. And that's what I'm worried about.
Yeah, I mean, similar sort of, well, not similar script, but the Canadian, I mean, it was a 0-0 game until the third, and then the Canadians finally take advantage of some power plays and scored two, one on a 5-on-3 and another one on the follow-up. They got two goals. So it was 2-0 lead in the third period, I think with about 12, 13 minutes left. And then, you know, the Leafs were able to tie it up. And again, it's, I guess it'd be one thing if the Leafs were really sort of coming wave after wave and they were really sort of putting their foot down or, you know, putting their foot on the gas and coming, be sort of looking unstoppable. But it was, again, it wasn't that one. Well, they were both off of brutal giveaways. One, Edmondson gave it away, and then the next thing, you know, Spezza sort of takes a swing at it, and it goes up Petrie's stick and into the net. So you feel bad. Like, there's nothing Price can do about that. And then the next one, it's another giveaway, and it's another sort of deflected shot off a defenseman. And then, and like, the, it's weird, right? The Habs are doing a very good job. I mean, you've, everyone's heard about it on, against the Matthews line, right? I think that's the one goal. Matthews has one goal. Marner has none. I think Hyman might have one. So they've been doing a really good job corralling those guys and really, really frustrating them. And, but, you know, in typical Canadiens fashion, it's like they're finding ways to get beat by, I mean, I'm not going to say William Nylander is like a spare part. He's playing really well. But I mean, you know, two goals against Jake Muzzin in game five, the TJ Brody goal in game six. It's like they're letting guys that, you know, aren't really the offensive thrust of the team find ways to score meaningful goals. And I know the playoffs are built around having, you know, guys come up big in big spots, but it just feels like such a Canadiens thing where they're going to have a great game against some of the best players in the league and then find a way to lose to, like, you know, Zach Bogosian's going to get a big goal. You know, not to put out Zach Bogosian, but, you know, he's not really known for his offense. So it's just kind of one of those things where you think they're doing a great job against their better players, but for some reason they're struggling. And maybe it is, to your point, the player usage. I mean, everyone saw the numbers. I think Weber was over 30, Sherratt was over 30, Petrie was over 30. I think Edmondson was around 30, and then it was 6.5 for Kulak and Gustafsson. And I don't get it. I mean, I understand Gustafsson is a defensive liability. We've talked about this before. But if you're going to dress him and only play him 6 minutes, I mean, Kulak isn't terrible, and he's actually one of the better defensemen at getting the puck out of the zone, you know, on breakouts. So I don't know why you'd sit him 6 minutes, play him only 6.5 minutes in a game. You know, it's
because
it's
they don't trust his partner, right? But I'll just point out, they pulled Gustafsson out, and the Leafs scored two goals. So, you know, whatever they were seeing that they didn't like, taking him out didn't make them defensively stronger.
No, I don't think it was necessarily what they saw from him, his game and the game. I think it's just his tendencies, and you know what kind of player he is. You don't want him to make a – and you're right, you know, with Edmondson with a giveaway – I think it was Edmondson.
Sherratt like waved at the puck on the tying goal.
Yeah.
Put it backhand weakly up the side of the boards, gave it to a Leaf player, passed it, they shot it off Petrie's stick again, and went in the net. And it's just like, I don't know.
No, you're right. So, I mean,
I've fallen out of love with Ben Sherratt, okay?
Well, we've
Sherratt and I are over. We are over, okay?
Yeah. Well, Sherratt has not done himself any favors to Canadiens fans this year at all, but... You know, yeah, I mean, if you have the guys in, sure, if you want to limit their ice, fine, but 6.5 minutes is ridiculously low. You got to get those guys. If you're going to play them a little and you want to sort of really, I guess, lean more heavily on four defensemen, at least play them 10 minutes. You can find 10 minutes, 10, 11 minutes to throw these guys out there. I mean, even if you don't want to play Kulak, Gustafsson, you can still throw Kulak out there once in a while with.
Totally.
You know, okay, Weber does need to go on the shift. We'll put Kulak out there for a bit. You know, you sort of find a way to rotate him in so everyone gets a little bit of a rest. Because, you know, while the Canadiens have made it work so far, I mean, you're playing with fire with, you know, your... You know, we've talked about the age of this team, some of the players that they like to rely on. And you're asking for trouble, I think, if you're going to be playing Shea Weber 30 minutes a night. I mean, I know part of it was because of overtime, but still, if you're going to be playing 4D, you know, this... These guys, if you're going to do it, they need to be, like, in their primes. And none of these guys are in their primes anymore, I don't think.
Oh, they look so gassed in that overtime period. Look, yeah. I want to circle back to but you said something that made me just sort of touched off something in my brain. You know, the story of the series was going to be veteran players on the Montreal Canadiens against the speed and skill, elite skill, of the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I think the script has been flipped in some ways, because what we've seen is it's our young skilled players on Montreal and it's the veterans, by and large, who've stepped up for Toronto. And mm-hmm. I just think it's interesting that, like, you know, as you try to define the storylines, that's one of the things that's not predictable. I've already pointed out, you know, around player usage, I just don't understand the Cole Caulfield, Kokonyemi, like sitting them, and then you realize that they're your best players and they've been responsible along with Suzuki for the biggest goals in this series, and they're why you're there. And to not play them the first two games, it really bothered me. But the other thing I don't understand is, and we can get to Romanov, and I don't understand why that player played all season, mm-hmm. and then something happened in the last couple of weeks of the season, and suddenly he's can't play a single game. I don't get that. But this is what I want to get to, because Marc Bergevin is known for picking up defensemen, because you always need more defensemen.
Yeah.
But we are short defense right now, right? If you have a third pair that you don't trust to play for the second half of the third period and any shifts in overtime, that means that you don't have a decor that can meet the challenge. And so I'm just confused generally by the fact that I think most of us presumed when he went out and picked up Merrill and Augustinsson, and I know that Merrill is injured, but most of us presumed, well, if nothing else, the Canadians will have 3D to be able to run with, and we don't, as we saw. I think in that overtime period, watching Ben Chiarot and Shea Weber bent over, totally exhausted, icing the puck or just flipping it up to try and catch their breath. At one point, I looked up and the shots were 11-1. And I think when KK scored, it was 14-1 before they scored. And I know it's overtime and all you need is one shot, but like, you have to put yourself in a position to succeed. And I'm just a little surprised that in terms of our usage, there hasn't been a little bit more creativity. As you say, get Kulak in, you know, every three shifts or something, so the guys get a little bit longer to take a breath. If you're only going to play Gustafsson dress Romanov. If he ends up sitting on the bench because you don't like what you see, you're no different off than what you were with Gustafsson in the lineup. So I just have some doubts about this interim head coach, and I don't understand. And look, ultimately we have to defer to the people who get paid to do this job, and ultimately management will decide whether these are people that they want to continue in these roles. But just watching as you and I both do, seeing the player usage, I just have a lot of questions, and I think ultimately, we are lucky to be in this position going into a game seven. I do not expect us to see Romanov. I don't, unless there's an injury that we don't know about. Merrill is out, so we're likely to have the same D pairs. That, to me, spells, that makes me nervous, because what that sets up is a situation where if Toronto can go hard at our defense, they could break them down, and you can't be surprised if either Chiarot or Weber are exhausted going into Game 7 tonight.
For sure, and you know, it's not like the Canadiens' defense has been this sort of, you know, brick wall. It's hard to penetrate. You know, they give even when they're rested, they can be beat. You know, so it's making these guys more exhausted because you're gonna use them like crazy. Even though I think Weber had probably his best game, and I can't remember when as. On the defensive side of the game, you're again playing with fire a bit, sort of running this guy out there like he's 25 when he's 35. So, I mean, we'll see. I mean, if you're gonna play a guy 5 minutes or 6 minutes, what's even the point? I know short bench and all that stuff. I get it. You know, you're playing to win, but if your team is gonna run out of gas by the end of the game, then you're doing something wrong. You know, I think. It's something you can get away with if you have a young team overall. Like, I know Chicago did it when they were really good, but they had Brent Seabrook and Duncan Keith were in their prime. Nick Holmers, they're all under 30. They're all like 25, 26. You can get away with it then, or you can get away with playing. I think, was it Darnell Nurse in one of the overtimes played like an hour? You're like, fine, but he's young. And, you know, I know it's still not great, but he's young and he can probably handle it a lot better than someone who has all those miles, like a bit like a Shea Weber, right? He's got a long career in terms of he's been playing for however, I don't know exactly how many years, but you know, he's been playing for quite a while. Plus, he plays that physical style that wears on your body. So it's, I'm with you, it's asking for trouble. And if you're only going to play, if you're not going to play anyone, if you're going to play, sorry, Gustafsson, who was literally a depth pickup, right? At the depth, he was, like we talked about, sort of unexpectedly they lost Victor Mete, so they had to find someone who could fill that role. I mean, he's the spare part of spare parts that they picked up this year, and I feel like it's interesting that they're not going with Romanov. Like we said, he played all year. You know, you barely ever took him out, and then all of a sudden it's playoffs and he can't go. I think it's odd. Unless he's hurt. But if he's hurt, say, tell us. You know what I mean? And if he's injured or something, he can't go for whatever reason, say something so you don't have to deal with these stupid questions, right? But I don't think he is. I think it's all coaches' decisions, but like, I don't know. I'd rather see Romanov out there, because if you're too afraid to play Gustafsson except for on the power play, then... And I mean, it's not like... I mean, if you want to go back to like 2010, it's not even like he's a Marc-Andre Bergeron who was a weapon on the power play who would score goals. He's like a more of a facilitator, which is fine, but, you know, if you're too afraid to throw him out there in the third period, then I don't know. I'm with you. It's playing with fire, and it's asking a lot of these guys who are already worn down because of the way the schedule worked out this year, though, especially down the stretch for the Habs with playing four games a week for 6 weeks. I mean, these guys are already kind of worn out.
I just wish, I mean, I they're not going to do it, but I just, it would be amazing if Romanov was played on Mitch Marner's side, and every single time Marner came down that wing, Romanov hit him at the blue line. And they tried that for the first period. I just, any time a Leafs player comes over the blue line, they're going to have some contact, and Romanov's going to throw his body around. If they don't like what they see afterward and they need to go to 5D, fine, whatever. But I just don't – he must be doing something that I can't see that is so bad to have – that negates all the other weapons that he brings. And I think it's easy just to sort of be critical of the coach and be critical of they should be playing this guy and not this guy. But what we've seen is the youth is the future, and let's play the youth. And that, once they decided to do that, the Canadians have looked far more dangerous. And yeah, now we're playing for a series win, and the Games have 7 victory against their historic rivals. So
yeah, the one thing before we move on, it's, you were saying about overtime. That overtime looked like games 2, 3, and 4, though. It was very nerve wracking. The Canadians couldn't get anything going. You know, it was the same thing. They couldn't get out of their zone. It was probably fatigue, but they couldn't get the puck out. They, like you said, they iced it a bunch. And Carey Price, I mean, he made some, you know, he made 14 saves, and he looked, you know, it's overtime, so every shot you kind of hold your breath no matter what. And they just were able to take advantage of a turnover just like in game five, which is great, but, you know, again, it was a little concerning that they couldn't generate anything. You know, it was, they get the puck over the red line, they dump it in, and then they have to go change because they'd spent their whole shift defending. And so it was just a little bit, I was a little bit concerned because I'm like, man, they don't look like they have any push anymore. Like, they look like they're like, I don't know, they just look like they're not there. So thankfully they took advantage of that turnover to force the game 7, and, you know, anything can happen in this game. So let's hope they, you know, we see the Canadians from the last two games and not necessarily the Canadians from earlier in the series.
let's just hope they have anything left in the tank. Let's do some keys to victory here.
Yeah.
Because I have a few,
Can I put a caveat on this?
Yeah, go on.
Obviously, Carey Price is a given. So, yeah, there you go. That's it.
Well, Carey Price has to play the way Carey Price has this season. Yeah. He can't, or not this season, the series. He can't take a break. But the Habs need to have a first period consistent with the last two periods. They have to focus on exiting the zone smartly. No more one-handed backhands up the boards to a waiting Leafs player. But I really think when they force the play in the zone, when they get in front of Campbell and throw that puck in, it doesn't have to be a good shot, right? I mean, in terms of the Corey Perry goal, for example, you get in deep, you put the puck on the ice, Campbell doesn't seem to be able to react in those circumstances, and you get a greasy goal. And those greasy goals are set up by physical play. So I think the question is, can they start as well as they've started? Can they avoid the bad bounces that have allowed Toronto to get back in to the games, both in Game 5 and Game 6? And can they finish? Can they score goals when they need to? And I really just hope, honestly, Connor, and this is going to be weird for Habs fans to hear, but like win or lose, I'm just really happy that this team, and especially the young players, have been able to step up in this series. Because we have seen some of the best play from this team in the last couple of games. And, of course, we've seen some brain farts and we've seen some bad decisions. But the fact that they've been able to come back from down 3-1 to force a Game 7 by relying upon their youth, by relying upon, quite frankly, Connor, the things we've been talking about all along, that makes me feel like this is a team that has a future, win or lose Game 7.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we can, whenever the season ends for the Canadiens, we'll obviously talk about the future. But yeah, it's definitely been nice to see that they've realized, or the coaching staff has realized, or whoever's pulling the strings has like realized that, you know, what got fans excited in the bubble and playoffs was when playing the kids and you know, Nick Suzuki and Jesperi Kotkaniemi stepping up in a big way. They've done it again this year, and Cole Caulfield is just another layer to that, and he's looked really good and dangerous. You know, he's hit a crossbar, he's hit a post, he set up Nick Suzuki. I think he's primed for a big goal, so we'll see. You know, it's a big game and big players turn up in big games. So I think the big key, I think, is, you know, despite all, they obviously have to look like they did in Game 5 and Game 6. They have to play that way. I think continuing, I know this is easy, but to keep stifling Marner and Matthews. And you can see they're getting frustrated. Marner especially, like, he's had a few looks where he probably should have scored, but I guess he's overthinking and he's like double clutching the puck. Don't give them anything easy. And again, obviously this is the plan, but I have my one concern as a fan in this game is, you know, letting those guys sort of score. If they get a goal like earlier in the first and start feeling themselves, it might make for a long evening. But I think if you can keep frustrating them, and they're getting frustrated. You know, we're a long way from, you know, Matthews smiling while he's getting roughed up by Ben Chiarot in the first game one there. So, you know, and I think also the longer you keep the Leafs off the scoreboard, the more doubt creeps in because of their recent, not that necessarily is, you know, past performance isn't always indicative of future results, but, you know, this group has had their issues in elimination and game sevens. You know, elimination games in Game 7. So I think if you keep frustrating them, I think it works better for the Canadiens because I think they're going to start, some of their key players are going to start gripping their sticks a little tight. And it's only natural as a person, as of anyone, thinking, here we go again. So
how much credence do you put in that, Connor? I'm just curious. Like, I don't...
Well, I think there's some of it. I mean, as you know, I've played sport. We've all played sports, right? But I mean, I've never obviously played at that high level. I've never actually really played in a game, in a sport with a series format of like playoffs, like football and rugby and stuff, for the most part, they're one games. But I mean, I've played in games where we're playing a team that we should beat for whatever reason, and it's not going right, and you're going, uh-oh, like, you know, here we go. I think of like, I also think back to like the Canadiens when they played the Penguins and the Capitals, you know, in the 2010, where you know, people are kind of looking for parallels. You get a goal early, and then you frustrate them. It's, you know, it goes a long way because they're already they've already been sort of, I think, feeling we've got this team, we should be able to close it out. They haven't been able to close it out twice now. You know, if you can put that seed of doubt into their mind, there's a football podcast I listen to, but this guy talks about the curse of Spoelstra. You know, you're supposed to win, and if things don't start going your way right away, you know, it's only natural. I mean, it's probably better if they're not going to have fans. If, let's say, the Habs get an early goal or an early two goals for, you know, it's probably better because then you won't feel the uneasiness from the fans. But, you know, if it's a frustrating game for, like, the Leafs and, you know, they're supposed to win, they were supposed to, you know, everyone had picked them to win in four or five games, you know, that creeping sense of, like, not frustrated, I don't want to say dread, but, like, we've been here before, it's there. I mean, you're a person, right? Everyone has those feelings, and I know they're professional athletes and things like that, and that's why you bring in veterans. But I mean, I'm not going to start railing up, like, it's not like Joe Thornton has the greatest playoff history. It's not like Jason Spezza has the greatest playoff history in terms of success at winning Stanley Cups. So, like, you know, they've all got their sort of playoff baggage on this team. And I think, you know, if you can put pressure on Jack Campbell, you know, if you give, like, you know, the Leafs also have this weird history of, like, in game sevens, they always give up a weird goal. Like, there's always a bad goal against in a game seven for the Leafs and at a bad time. And, you know, I talk about it with a buddy of mine, my friend who's a Leafs fan. And, you know, he's easy to talk to. He's not, you know, crazy, you know, and frustrating like some Leaf fans can be. And I'm sure Canadians fans can be to other people. But, like, you know, I think it was the last time they played Boston, we were just watching. They weren't playing bad, but then it was like they gave up Frederick Anderson gave up. I know it's a different goalie, but there's always seems to be a bad goal that goes in a game seven that just sort of turns the tide. And he's like, every year, every time, there's always something. And so he's already nervous. He's already like, he's just waiting for the other shoe to drop. You know, ever since the series started, he's kind of been like, he's like, I don't take anything for granted. He's like, I have too much baggage with this team, like, to assume anything. So, and I think a lot of fans, Leaf fans, are like that right now. So if they can, to your point, if the Canadians can get out to a good start, they're gonna feel that pressure. You can't not. If you're supposed to be this elite team, you're supposed to, you know, you're Austin Matthews, you scored 40 goals. You're Mitch Marner, you had however many points this year. You know, everyone's been talking about how great you are and how amazing, and they're just gonna steamroll their way to the Final Four. And now you're in a game seven, and things aren't going the way you think they're gonna go. It's only natural to start feeling that pressure. Now, how you respond to that pressure is another thing, but I think putting that seed of doubt in them early, kind of like I said with game one, if you can put that seed of doubt in them early, it didn't really play out the way I thought it would, but, you know, winning game one, putting that seed of doubt with their playoff history is now, especially in game sevens, I think you got to get on them early and really make them feel it. And I think that'll go a long way, I think, for the Canadians in terms of winning the game. So, I don't know. That's sort of where I come, is to sort of just find a way to plant the seed of doubt in their head more than I think they're already hearing, because I'm sure the media in Toronto is just going to go keep talking. I mean, you've seen they're like 0-6 in game sevens, this group.
Yeah, so, well, that's what I was going to say, is that, you know, we often talk about the Montreal media as being a confidence killer for players, or adding a whole nother layer onto, you know, what's already a stressful situation. And in that regard, you have to see the Leafs as, you know, the team with the most to lose, and the Canadians as the underdogs having come back. And so that has to take some pressure off. But, you know, it'll be fascinating and I'm not going to tune into sports radio in Toronto today. I'm just not going to do it to myself. But it's going to be fascinating to hear how much doom and gloom there is versus how much sort of enthusiasm and hope there is. Because in some ways, the Leafs have already lost. not to be able to put away the Canadians two games in a row and now having to play a game seven when you have Winnipeg waiting in the wings, having swept the Oilers. I don't put a lot of credence into the whole the superstitions, and the Leafs haven't won a playoff series since whatever, and they can't win game sevens and 1967 and
they can't close out a series. That's the big thing. Like, they were saying in elimination games, this team is, like, not very good. And then
no killer instinct, right? Yeah. That's the line? Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, if the Leafs win tonight, are we going to suddenly say now they have the killer instinct? Like, they're in a tough position because, you know, it's playoff hockey, and a couple shots went against them. And whether it's Galchenyuk turning over the puck at the blue line, or whether it's another defensive lap that allows Paul Byron to set up Kokuniemi. And I don't know if you saw that goal. It went off the defenseman's leg, I think, and sort of like petered up and over. But, you know, this is why you play the games. If the best team is just supposed to win every single time,
Why play?
And so now we get to get amped up for the game tonight. Connor, I haven't seen you as active as I sometimes notice on the Twitter machine during the games. Is that because you're biting your nails off and you can't use your phone?
No, I'm partly because when the games start, I'm actually putting my son down. He goes down around 7:30, 8 o'clock, so, and he is really attached to daddy putting him to bed. So I tape the games and then I play catch up. And then on Saturday, I was, you know, watching, I said, outside with some friends, so I, you know, don't want to be rude on my phone tweeting away while we're talking, so.
Well, it's the same thing for me. I don't find myself wanting to tweet about the game. I want to just focus in on the game and not, like, even if it's a 30-second where I take my eyes off the screen to, like, try to type something witty, I really just want to be, like, tuned in and watching while we can, you know?
Yep. No, it's, I guess because it's the playoffs and everything, every little mistake is amplified, I guess, and you're like, you never know what play is going to lead to a goal, you know, wherever it's made, so you kind of are sort of fixated on, you know, it's weird, right? Because in the season, you'll see things happen, and you're kind of like, eh, whatever. Like, oh, turnover, but they got it, and it's okay. But in the playoffs, you're like, oh, God, he turned it over. What are you doing? Get it out. You know, like, everything is amped up, so I think that's part of it, too. I just kind of, like you, I don't like to really take my eyes off the screen. So, yeah, I mean, it's fun. And, like, I can't really complain. I mean, like you said, I think it's already kind of been like, the Leafs have already kind of, not that they've lost, but they win now almost feels, I mean, they'll still celebrate it because they'll be like, we finally won a game 7 and they're finally going on to the second round. But, you know, for a team that was supposed to steamroll, you know, the Canadiens, you know, it was obviously not as easy as they would have hoped. And so, you know, we'll see. I just, sorry, I'm a bit all in my head now thinking about game 7. I wasn't thinking about it, but yeah, it's coming up and it's exciting. It's going to be a good time. I mean, like I said, it's going to be fun, especially for the Canadians, if they can, like I said, jump on them early. I want to see the doubt. You know, and I guess if you're a Leafs fan, you want to see that if that happens, you want to see them bow up their backs and actually perform. Because I think that's another issue that they might have is, you know, they're like you said, they're no killer instinct, and I think they can be knocked off their game easily when the pressure's on. So again, I keep saying we'll see. Obviously, we will, but I mean, I don't know. I don't know if we're talking about, like, our feelings for the game so far. I don't know if we're quite at that time yet, but, like, I don't have. I guess I'm going to go with, like, I feel the way I felt about the last two games where I didn't really have a feeling. Obviously, it's a little easier to have a bit more confidence just based on what you've seen, like, from the Canadians the last couple of games. But I don't know. Anyway, we'll talk about predictions in a minute. The other thing I just want to double back on for the Leafs, though, is, like, you know, if you're a Leafs fan dealing with the crap, like, they have their own, like I said, playoff baggage, right? And the two goals that they gave up in overtime the last two games, they came off, like, brutal giveaways. Like you said, Paul Byron, I mean, Travis Dermott, I don't know what he was doing for the puck. He, like, had a way out, did, like, a weird spin move, and then just left it for Paul Byron. And then to Kotkaniemi, and then off the stick into the net. And then, like we said, Galchenyuk with the, I think it was even before, it was, even the pass to Galchenyuk was a bad pass that he got, and then he made an even worse play. So it's just, like, these, like, devastating moments where your team is, like, actually doing okay, and they just find a way to blow it. And I think for Leafs fans, that's what the worry is. They, you know, their history is finding a way to blow it over and over and over. So that's what I'm talking about. You know, the curse of Sposta, the fight, like, the baggage is being in actually an okay positions and finding ways to screw it up. And I'm not trying to, you know, speak out of turn. I think most Leaf fans would agree with that. So anyway, game 7, I don't know. I'll let you start. I don't know how you feel about the game, but what are your, you know, impressions? What do you think is going to happen?
Oh, wow. I famously called the Habs in 7.
Yes, you did.
One of a very few to have done that. I love that tweet that's going around where all the Sportsnet experts, you know, where they cross off their predictions, because the only one that's left, I think, is Eric Engels, who predicted the Leafs in 7. Everyone else had the Habs going out way earlier. I honestly don't have a feel for the game. I'd love to say that the Canadians are definitely going to win, but I just feel like they've used up any luck that they have, you know? They've used up their luck quotient, and now it's going to come down to effort. And of course, it's not impossible that they win another overtime game, but for I am not going to feel comfortable until I see the Canadians up, but continuing to play with that energy and that intensity. And so I you know, a 3-2 win or a 4-3 win or a 2-1 win is going to make me very nervous. I really want to see all the good things that we've seen out of the Habs this series and limiting some of the bad stuff. And again, whoever wins, I feel like Montreal has won in the sense that they've realized the youth is the future of this team. And while we can quibble about player usage and Romanov and whether it's smart to go to 4D and all that other stuff, at the end of the day, the coach can only do so much. The general manager can only do so much. It's down to the players. And if they bring the effort that we've seen in the first two periods of the last two games, and they can continue that over 60 minutes, I think the Habs could do the unbelievable and beat the Leafs in seven games. And I'm here for it.
Yeah, I think we'll know pretty early on what kind of game it's going to be. I think naturally the Leafs are probably going to come out flying, you know, to try and sort of put the, you know, get up early and sort of put the Canadians off their game a bit, because we all know the Canadians are much more comfortable playing from, you know, ahead, even though they've given up leads in the last two games. You don't necessarily want this team that struggles to score to be trying to chasing a game. So I think if the Habs can weather the storm early, or heck, you know, maybe they're going to come out with more energy, but you know, I think early on you're going to know what kind of game it's going to be. And if we see a lot of the game, a lot of the stuff that we saw sort of in the overtime, despite winning in Game 6, you know, the Canadians can't get out of their zone, then I'm going to feel like it's probably going to play out like Games 2 through 4. If it's more even, I think if the game is played more evenly, I think that the Canadians are going to win. Because I think if it's played more evenly, the Leafs are going to start, again, there is a mental aspect to this stuff, right? And like, you know, the Canadians, as we talked about, underdogs, no one thinks they're going to win. I mean, besides us, you know, no one predicted them to win. So I think if the Canadians are going to be in the game, the longer they're in the game, the longer it's either tied, the longer it's tied, it's a 0-0, 1-1, whatever, I think it's going to, I think the mental aspect, it might take over the Leafs. I think, like I said, there's a lot of pressure on these guys. They had you know, despite the fact they were in probably the worst division in the league, they had a great year. There is a lot of expectations. There's an expectation that they're going to get to the Final Four because they should beat the Canadians. They should beat the Jets if they get there. So, again, the pressure of that and the pressure of having to hear and listen and, you know, trying to play not to hear about how the team, you know, fell apart again in the playoffs. I don't think they want to hear it, and I understand, but that can enter your head. And I'm not saying it's going to happen to everybody, but it can enter to some people. I mean, I'm sure... You know, I know after Game 6, I mean, you hear people were, like, really going after Mitch Marner on his, like, on his social media. And it's like, what do we think? You know, that's not I don't think that's a great way to motivate a guy to start playing better. I don't think he's playing bad. He just, you know, their best players have gone cold at the wrong time. You know, and it's kind of like in Edmonton. I mean, the thing is, it's you have to expect a bit of a dip in play when you're on this incredible pace all year, right? You pretty much feel like Austin Matthews is scoring goals every game, you know. And it's, you know, you go on these big runs and then, but eventually you're going to hit a bit of a cool patch. It's just the nature of any sport. And unfortunately they're hitting their cool patch at the wrong time for the Leafs. And as a Habs fan, obviously it's great. So, I mean, like I said, if the Canadians can make this a tight and don't let the Leafs sort of pull ahead, like if they can keep it close, 0-0, 1-1, I think the longer the game goes and the longer the Canadians stay in the game, the Leafs are the doubt. Like they don't strike me as a team that is comfortable playing in those kinds of games, if you know what I mean. They like, even though they've played way better defensively in general this year and all in that, but I don't think they're comfortable yet in those tight kind of games. I think that's when the pressure is really going to start coming, if you know what I mean. And I think that's going to be sort of the telltale sign. If the first period ends, and if the first period, I think it's after the first period, if it's tied or if Montreal's even winning, I think it's going to be a bad game. I think it's going to be, well, obviously it's good for the Canadians, but I think the Canadians will actually win the game. So I'm not necessarily making a bold prediction, but I think we'll be able to tell what type of game it's going to be within the first 5-10 minutes. And we'll be able to sort of extrapolate. I mean, obviously, this, if unless Carey Price, you know, stops 60 shots or whatever, and you know it's a 1-0 shutout, fine. But I think we'll be able to know right away what kind of game it's going to be and whether it's going to be a long night for the Habs or it's going to be a long night for the Leafs. And just based on what I've been saying, I think it's actually going to be a long night for the Leafs. I think just a lot of the baggage and all the people, it's like, even though there's no one in the arena, I think the weight, you can almost feel the, I'm not even there, and you can almost feel the weight from the fans, like, already dreading something that hasn't even happened yet, but they're already kind of, like I said, like my friend is waiting for the other shoe to drop, because that's what their history is, that's all they know. So, you know, and I'm here for it as a Canadiens fan, so I think it's going to be, I think the Habs are going to win tonight, just as I've talked myself into it.
So much.
I think it's going to be like a dirty, like 2-1, maybe with an empty net 3-1 kind of game.
Okay. I don't like that so much because it makes me nervous, but I do tend to agree. I do tend to agree with you that the first 5 minutes is going to be essential. And if the Canadiens can match the Leafs' intensity and start peppering Campbell with shots, and look, I'm going to be honest with you, I would shoot low on that guy.
Yeah.
I would shoot low on that guy and try and look for a rebound. The Canadiens have not, when they score, it tends to be these sort of overtime miracle shots or sort of more greasy goals. And that's what I think we need a little bit more of in front of the net, make life difficult for Campbell, puck on the ice. But I love your confidence. I really, really, really want you to be right. I'm nervous, man. I've been nervous, and I'm going to continue to be nervous.
Well, it's natural to be nervous, but the other thing I'm also is like, right, the Canadiens aren't supposed to be here, so hopefully they play that way. And maybe you figure the kids are too naive to understand, you know?
I mean, I think there's something to that. I really do think there's something to that.
Well, with that said, Game 7, you're hours away. Hopefully we've prepped you enough for it, and hopefully we will have a series preview and recap of the first few games against the Winnipeg Jets for the Canadiens if everything goes the right way. But until that time, I am Connor LaPalme signing off for the Last Round Habs podcast. Enjoy Game 7, everyone. Go Habs, go. Let's continue the Leafs' misery.
Let's do it. Go Habs, go. See you, Connor.
Bye.
This has been the Last Word on Habs podcast, brought to you by the Last Word on Sports Network. Join us next week. Until then, see you on the ice.